Following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's nice to see familiar faces and so many new faces alike. I should probably introduce myself because some of you are noticing that I am not Mark Nunberg. So my name is Mary Ann Johnson, and I'm a longtime practitioner here at Common Ground. I'm on the ethics committee here. I've done a number of different roles, and I also now teach a mindfulness-based stress reduction course here at Common Ground. In my professional life, I am a mediator. I'd like to tell everyone I do all things M, meditation, mediation. Yeah. So, and an organizational development consultant. So, that's where I come from, and I've been practicing for a little over 20 years. So, Mark asked me to do this on Labor Day weekend because he was going to be gone, and so I pictured a room full of about 10 people because I assumed everyone would be gone and whatnot. But I'm really happy to be here with all of you, and I also have to say it's incredibly humbling to be here. I'm honored to be here, but it's also really humbling to sit here in this cushion and teach. I'm also struck by the fact that I'm seeing faces. And you know, when you sit in the back of the room, all we ever see is each other's heads, right? So it's kind of fun to have this as a different and new orientation. So very happy to be here. So I'm speaking tonight on taking refuge, and formally about taking the three refuges, the triple gem. I'll say that more about that later, but I'm just struck as we sit here in this meditation hall together, practicing just like others have done for over 2,500 years. It's rather amazing, isn't it, when you think about it? 2,500 years, the same teachings, the same practice as we sit here on our cushion. Kind of reminds me of a funny little story. Years ago, I was moving into a new home, and my sister and brother-in-law helped me move, and my little nephew, Danny, was 4 years old at the time. And after we were all moved in, Danny came over and he wanted to check out the house. So he's going up and down all the stairs, walking in every room, open up every closet, really scoping it out, checking it all out. And finally, he eagerly comes to find me, and with a great deal of pleasure and a lot of confidence, he says to me, "I'm Mary Ann, Aunt Mary Ann. I have to tell you something. It's the same stuff, just a different house." So, maybe practice. Legacy is a little bit the same, not exactly, but it evoked my thoughts of Danny. So, tonight I'll be speaking about the Buddhist devotional practice that is often, again, referred to as the Triple Gem or the Three Refuges. The chanting or repeating of the three phases the three phrases that express gratitude and respect for the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. I'd like to speak with you about my own experiences and practices, my own journey with learning about these refuges and taking these. Talk to you a little bit about what other people have said, teachers in particular, about reciting these refuges. And then also hopefully have a fair amount of time where we can talk about what it means to you and what that looks like for you in your life. So I look forward to that. At Common Ground here, as many of you know, we recite the three refuges along with the precepts being our moral or ethical trainings, on a quarterly basis here at Common Ground. If you haven't ever done that before, I would really encourage you to do it. It's quite a beautiful experience, and I just looked at the newsletter before I came in here, and the next one is going to be held on September 18th on a Sunday morning. And how many of you have been to the Sunday morning sits? Oh, great. And if you haven't, I have to say there's a bonus prize. The little kids usually come up in front of the room and sing with Mark, which is quite a joyous experience. So, and I believe they do that as well when we practice our quarterly meetings where we do recite the refuges and the precepts. So also, some of you are probably have a formal practice where you now, and for many years perhaps, have recited the three refuges in your daily practices. Or you became acquainted with reciting the refuges on retreat, or as part of a Buddhist sitting group or a study group. I know here on Monday nights in the Buddhist study group, which I sometimes attend, we recite refuges as part of the class before we started out. So, and also to some of you, I'm aware of the fact that the Triple Gem or the reciting of these refuges may be new to you. And if they're not new to you, perhaps for some of you, they're an uncomfortable ritual, something that you're just not so sure of. And I want you to know right now that if that's where you're at, I was in your very shoes for quite some time at the beginning of my practice, and I'll share that with you later. So wherever you are, I just encourage you to take a seat back and listen to the talk and reflect on what it may mean to you. And I look forward to engaging in the second portion of this, which is talking to you about your own experiences and maybe taking some of your questions. So I came to this practice, as I assume many of you did as well, wanting freedom from stressful life and relationships. Secondarily, I think probably wanting a path, seeking a way out. And thirdly, along the way, I think I had this longing for a community of people that I might learn from and grow with as a spiritual community. In retrospect, I now see how this intention has been supported and manifested over the years through the gradual, and I will underline gradual, unfolding and deepening of my practice, and a slow but sure development of deep faith in taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So, taking refuge. I pondered about that. What does it mean to take refuge? So I, of course, went to the dictionary. And using the English dictionary as a source, here's what I got. Refuge, shelter or protection from danger or distress. Safe haven, sanctuary, retreat. And here's the one that it ended with that really struck me. Something to which one has recourse in difficulty. Something to which one has recourse in difficulty. In the Buddhist tradition, and as practiced here at Common Ground, when we recite or take refuges, in a demonstration of respect, gratitude, and devotion, we put our hands in anjali, like this. Palms together, held in front of the heart, in a prayer position, you could say. And here at Common Ground, as we do this, we also bow our head slightly. As Mark told me, the way he likes to describe it is the upper fifth of the body bows. So that's our practice here, not too different than what it is other places. That said, however, there are other practitioners, especially those who studied in Asia or studied with monastics in this country, who may kneel in full prostration with their kneeling, with their heads to the ground and hands placed above the head. But regardless of how we come to our bow, a bow of gratitude and reverence when we recite these refuges, in Pali and or in English, we all recite or chant basically the same three devotional phrases, saying them three times. I go to the Buddha for refuge. Buddham Saranam Gacchami. I go to the Dharma for refuge. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami. I go to the Sangha for refuge, Sangam, Saranam, Gachami. Now, although these are rather prescriptive refuges and phrases, if you will, handed down over thousands and thousands of years and recited by monastics and lay people alike, just as we do now. Pretty impressive to think about that. Although these are traditional phrases, I also want to suggest to you that there are many who practice these phrases and imbue these with other phrases, not so traditional phrases, that give special meaning to them. What taking refuge in the Buddha means to them, the Dhamma and the Sangha. I've had an opportunity over the last couple of weeks to ask Common Ground practitioners, do you recite the precepts? And if you do, what does it mean to you? And do you modify them and how? And I heard some extraordinarily beautiful things that people say. And I hope during our period together, some of you may be willing and able to share some of those. Traditionally, the reciting of the three refuges is done to mark one's commitment to their Buddhist practice and are recited daily. In some Buddhist traditions, taking refuge is done initially as a formal initiation to undertake the practice and are done as part of a traditional ritual or ceremony. 5 years ago, I had the good fortune of taking the refuges in a ceremony with Thich Nhat Hanh in Plum Village. Historically, the American Buddhist monk and scholar tells us that in accordance with pre-Buddhist India custom, going for refuge meant proclaiming one's allegiance to a patron, a powerful person or god, submitting to the patron's directives in hopes of receiving protection from danger. In the early days of Buddha's teaching, he goes on to say, Buddha's followers adopted the custom of taking refuge to express their allegiance to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. In the Buddhist context, this custom, this ancient custom pre-Buddha, of course, took on new meaning as Buddha is not viewed as a god. And a person taking refuge in the Buddhist sense was and is not asking for the Buddha to personally intervene to provide protection. Rather, we seek the Buddha's teachings. When we seek refuge in the Buddha's teachings, our practice and Sangha, we seek it as protection from the mind's conditioned tendencies towards greed, anger, and delusion. We seek refuge in the protective qualities, in the protective qualities embodied by the Buddha, such as compassion, generosity, patience, loving kindness, and equanimity. By taking the refuges, we take refuge in our own Buddha nature and in the potential for awakening, breath by breath, moment by moment. Again, as written by a Buddhist scholar, because the mind is the source of both the dangers and the release, there is a need for two levels of refuge: external refuges, which provide models and guidelines so that we can identify which qualities in the mind lead to danger and which lead to release. The internal refuges, i.e. the qualities leading to release that we develop in our mind in imitation of our external models. The internal level is where the true refuge is found. Our internalization of these refuges is where the true refuge is found. In his book, Taking the Path of Zen, Zen teacher Robert Aitken wrote, taking refuge in the three jewels is more of a vow than a prayer. The original Pali words of the three I take refuge lines, translated literally, mean, I will undertake to find my home in the Buddha. It's quite lovely. I will undertake to find my home in the Buddha, and then the Dharma and the Sangha. The implication that is that by finding my home in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I can free myself from blind conditioning and realize my true nature. Bless you. Taking refuge marks our intention to be on a spiritual path, to live a life of skillful thoughts and actions that are the cause for happiness, with the intention not to cause harm or suffering for ourselves or others. When we recite the refuges, we honor the inspiration and awakening of the Buddha, his teachings, our teachers, our Sangha friends, and all those near and far on a spiritual path. I feel as if enveloped in a field of protection when I recite the refuges. Against my own mind, heart, sometimes unskillful means of navigating my daily life and relationships. Needless to say, I am not always skillful. In reciting the refuges, I am given an opportunity to start anew with each sit, each day. I do not take this refuge lightly. It is also not held tightly. It is simply held in my heart as its home, no longer a concept in my mind or a rote practice to follow as it once was. Let's now take a little closer look at each of these refuges, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So I take refuge in the Buddha. When I first recited the refuges, probably like many of you in this room or some of you in this room, I was on retreat. It was my very first retreat, and I sat with a teacher named Shinzen Young. It was a retreat sponsored by TCVC. Some of you may be familiar with TCVC. It's a local kind of sister organization to Common Ground that holds retreats. It was many, many years ago, and being raised as a Catholic and attending parochial schools, one of the things that I found so refreshing about this Theravada Buddhist practice that we practice here at Common Ground was that there were seemingly so little externalized rituals or devotional practices. I didn't have to genuflect and all of that. And I appreciated that. There was something fresh and alive about that. All roads seem to lead back to the practice instead, our disciplined yet compassionate examination of the condition of our body and mind. But I really liked and trusted my teacher, Shinzen Young, at the time, still do, and thought he was on to something. So I followed his instructions and began reciting the refuges. I did what I could, and perhaps most importantly, what felt right for me at that moment in my practice. I loved the beauty of the sound of the community chanting together. I still do. And so I listened to the sounds of the words and how they carried through the room and in my body. That was my authentic experience of relating to the refuges at that point. That was my first practice with the refuges, experiencing the chanting as mindfully as I could. And for years, I continued to ponder and investigate for myself the significance of reciting these verses. It took many years, but over time, I have come to see the reliable, and I will call it the reliable nature of taking refuge in the Buddha as a historical and spiritual figure who, with much generosity, devoted his life to helping us see how we too might be free. That we too, not unlike Buddha as a human being and the many other students of his time, might at least to some degree in our own lives come to discover or uncover our own intrinsic, unconditioned Buddha nature. Taking refuge in the Buddha, as one of my Common Ground friends says, is, and I quote, taking refuge in those already enlightened qualities in my heart and mind. It's one of the unique phrases she does when she's doing reciting a refuge to the Buddha. Taking refuge in the Buddha is relaxing into the very real possibility of freedom. Freedom in this life, not as an abstract. It is not externalizing freedom as something that's out there or blind adoration to a statue of the Buddha. Instead, it is an internal realization and bowing to our own and others' wise hearts. I have a little something from Thich Nhat Hanh's book I'd like to read, The Heart of the Buddha's Teachings. And in it is his chapter on the three jewels, otherwise known as the three gems or the three refuges. And he says, this is good for us gardeners, to plant a seed or a seedling is to entrust it to the earth. The plant will live or die because of the earth. But the earth also entrusts herself to the plant. Each leaf that falls down and decomposes will help the soil be alive. When we take refuge in the Buddha, we entrust ourselves to the soil of understanding, and the Buddha entrusts himself or herself to us for understanding, love, and compassion to be alive in the world. Whenever I hear someone recite, I take refuge in the Buddha, I also hear the Buddha takes refuge in me. When in Palm Village, one day, Thich Nhat Hanh slowly walked in front of me, very, very slowly. I was in the meditation hall, and it was the slowest walk I think I've ever witnessed. Step by step, he was so mindful and had such grace in every step that I was surprised to find myself moved to tears. Now, when I'm on retreat with other teachers, watching those teachers bow to the Buddha and recite the refuges prior to their Dharma talks, I also now find that I often come to tears, gentle tears. And I have come to believe that these tears are tears of gratitude, tears of recognition that in this very moment, in this very breath, rests the potential for freedom. I take refuge in the Buddha in this way. Bless you. I take refuge in the Dharma. As many of you know, I don't need to tell you, this practice is not always an easy one. Anyone ever found that to be the case? And one day I was on retreat, and one of my meditation teachers said to me in this just really matter-of-fact way, Marianne, this practice may look simple, but it isn't easy. That was an understatement if ever I had heard one. It takes courage to follow this path. Courage is something I don't think we oftentimes talk about in this practice, but it takes tremendous courage. But the good news is that we have a wonderful path, an entire detailed map that shows us the way. And wonderful, wonderful teachers in this country, not unlike Mark, that are here to help guide us step by step to discover for ourselves what Jack Kornfield refers to as a path with heart. When I give refuge to the Dharma, I honor the brilliance of the Buddha's teachings. The meticulous articulation of a path for freeing the mind and heart of our everyday tendencies as human beings to want things to be different than the way they are. I honor the ability of our heart and minds to become vulnerable and release like the slow opening of a flower as we sit in stillness, simply observing this breath and knowing deeply, without needing to change it, this is just how it is in this moment. The Indian philosopher Krishnamurti once said, "It is in the very process of running away from what is that fear arises." And when we stop and awake to what is, awakening and freedom are possible. Taking refuge in the Dharma reminds us to come home again and again and again to the wisdom of the present moment, to the bare essential truth of this breath, this moment. It also means trusting the very natural unfolding of our practice, sometimes the very gradual and slow unfolding of our practice, with compassion, patience, and equanimity, sit after sit, year after year. I take refuge in the Dharma. There's a passage in a book from Joseph Goldstein. The book is One Dharma. Some of you may be familiar with it, in which he... lots of sneezes. It's allergy season. Bless you. It's a quote about taking refuges. And in it he says... he's expounded upon them earlier, but now he says, in their deepest meaning, these refuges always point back to our own actions and mind states. Although there may be many false starts and dead ends as we begin our journey, if our interest is sincere, we soon make a life-changing discovery that what we are seeking is within us. The writer Wu Wei, that's his real name, an Englishman who lived in Hong Kong for many years, captured the import of this turning within when he wrote, "What we are looking for is what is looking." And now, I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Sangha. In preparing for this talk, on many occasions, I pondered the lineage of our Theravada Buddhist tradition, again, the form of Buddhism that we practice here at Common Ground. In the origins of our meditation practice, I thought of the monastics, the monks and the nuns alike, who kept the practice and teachings alive for us to receive all these many years later. I thought of the depth of commitment, resolution, and pure generosity, not to mention memory, it took to keep the oral tradition alive and the teachings alive before the Buddha's teachings, the suttas, were written down, some 450 years after Buddha's death. When you consider, I remember one teacher who I knew who had studied quite seriously the suttas was telling me that she walked into a room once in Southeast Asia and the entire room was filled from corner to corner, top to bottom, with these documents, the suttas, for her to explore and read and study. And when you think that these monastics memorized before these suttas were written word for word, that shows such commitment, such compassion to all of us. It's a little overwhelming. Not to mention, don't you wish you had their memories? So, I thought of all the householders, lay people, who not unlike ourselves with daily struggles, stress, and joys, who practice as best they could, whenever they could, just as we do. To open our hearts, to learn to live wisely and compassionately with this human condition. Traditionally, taking refuge in the Sangha means taking refuge in paying respect to historical enlightened beings or the community of ordained monks and nuns who have kept our practice alive and who model skillful, wholesome ways of living in community. In the West, and in my own practice, it has also grown to mean honoring, cultivating and contributing to spiritual friendships in a community of practitioners. A Common Ground Sangha member recently went to her first retreat in IMS outside Boston. I like to refer to IMS as Common Ground's mothership. So, at any rate, she spoke of what it felt like to sit in that room in the meditation hall at IMS that's been there for so many years. And she thought of all those people who had sat in that room before her, year after year, retreat after retreat. She felt that this realization of all those people sitting year after year with such diligence in their practice provided the refuge, if you will, the inspiration to deepen her own retreat practice. Once the Venerable Ananda, one of Buddha's chief monks and his close personal assistant, I also think he was Buddha's cousin, remarked to the Buddha about his understanding of the power of spiritual friendships and a supportive sangha or community. According to the suttas, the Venerable Ananda said to the Blessed One, to Buddha, "This is half of the holy life, Lord. Admirable friendships." The Buddha replied, "Oh, don't say that, Ananda. Admirable friendship is actually the whole of the holy life. When a monk, or anyone else, has admirable people as friends, he can be expected to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path, a prerequisite to the deepening of our practice, spiritual friendships in a sangha." Taking refuge in the sangha can also mean a willingness to bump up against each other and to be willing to learn and grow together in community. As a revered Tibetan monk, now deceased, once said of taking refuge in the sangha is the community of people who have the perfect right to cut through your trips and feed you with their wisdom, as well as the perfect right to demonstrate their own neuroses and be seen through by you. The companionship within the sangha is a kind of clean friendship, he said. I remember early on in the days here at Common Ground when we were working on our ethics committee, Mark always used to use this term called a rub and scrub, that one of the gifts that we give to each other in a sangha, in a community like this, is the opportunity to see and be seen and to learn and grow that vulnerability with one another, which is a pretty powerful thing. Taking refuge in the sangha provides us with an opportunity to practice kindness, honesty, patience, lots of patience and generosity, and perhaps experience our own vulnerability, the opening of our heart and mind along the way. Taking refuge in the sangha does not mean we only have Buddhist friends or have to be an uber-involved person in Common Ground or any other organized sangha. It means that we find refuge in the inspiration and in the wise counsel of others on the path. I remember once sitting at Common Ground in the old building when it was in Wynne and Mark's house, actually their living room. Some of you may have sat there. I'm sure many of you did. And it was an especially difficult time for me, and I was especially tired that night. My brother was dying, and it was just a hard time. And in those days, as some of you may remember, it seems like a long time ago, but it's true, at the end of a session or a sit, some of us had to pick up our cushions and return them to the basement. Being very tired that night again, before I could begin the process of turning around to pick up my cushion, the person sitting behind me, whom I did not know and I don't think I've ever seen since, gestured that he would take my cushions downstairs for me tonight. A small gesture, perhaps, but this kindness lingers with me still. I take refuge in the Sangha. There is a poem that I found that I'm going to conclude with here. And I found it today. And although it doesn't specifically speak to the refuges, I think it speaks to, an important aspect of taking the refuge. It's written by Isra Beda, a Zen practitioner, author, and poet. And it's called, "What Is Our Life About?" And I ever so slightly abridged it just to make it a little bit shorter. Our aspirations, our calling, our desire for a genuine life is to see the truth of who we really are, that the nature of our being is connectedness and love, not the illusion of a separate self to which our suffering clings. It is from this awareness that life can flow through us, the unconditioned manifesting freely as our conditioned body. And what is the path? What is the refuge? To learn to reside in whatever life presents, to learn to attend to all those things that block the flow of a more open life, to see them as the very path of awakening. And what is the path? What is the refuge? To turn away from constantly seeking comfort and trying to avoid pain, to open to the willingness to just be in this very moment, exactly as it is, no longer ready to be caught in the relentless spinning mind, practices about awakening to the true self, no one special to be, nowhere to go, residing in the heart, just being. We are so much more than this body, just this personal drama. As we cling to our fear and our shame and our suffering, we forsake the gratitude of living from our natural being. So where, in this moment, do we cling to our views? Softening around the mind's incessant judgment, we can awaken the heart that seeks to be awakened. And when the veil of separation rises, life simply unfolds as it will. No longer caught in self-centered dreaming, we can give ourselves to others, like a white bird in the snow. Time is fleeting. Don't hold back. Appreciate this most precious life. Let's just take a few moments to collect ourselves, take a breath, two. Now I'd like to open this up to a discussion, if you will, about any questions you may have about what was said, or hopefully perhaps some of your own experiences with taking refuge or taking refuges. Comments, questions?
Read for me that literal translation.
Yes, I would be happy to. It's a matter of finding it.
I undertake to make my home in Buddha.
Good memory. You could have been way back when one of the monastics. Here we go. You're right. The original Pali words of the three I take refuge lines translated literally read, I will undertake to find my home in the Buddha. I will undertake to find my home in the Dharma. I will undertake to find my home in the Sangha. It's quite lovely, isn't it? I think sometimes we lose meaning in that Pali translation, and it's really nice when somebody goes to all the trouble and has the ability to translate like that for us. It's quite lovely. Thank you for asking. Other questions, reflections as you ponder on? Well said. Sure.
Thank you for presenting. Hmm. And the question is, you know, I've been going to Common Ground for a couple of years, I never come across this, so at what point is the time, or when do you, when does one say this?
Well, September 18th. It's the community gathering. You know, in my experience here at Common Ground, there that is about as formal as we get, I believe, with reciting the refugees. But it's a wonderful community gathering, and I know that the refugees that we use here are actually Thich Nhat Hanh's. And they're elegant and simple and nice. And at other times, you will find that we sing them in Pali. But I think that it would be a great opportunity on the 18th, just come in the morning. Anyone know what time that's? I always forget. Is it 10 o'clock on Sundays? 10:30 is when it is? Okay. You can check the newsletter on the way out, but the 18th would be a wonderful time. And usually, I think, that Mark talks a little bit about taking the precepts before you do that, too. But in our tradition, it's not a formality like it is in some other traditions, a rite of passage or initiation. However, many of us recite them daily as part of our practice, just as a grounding, a coming home, if you will, to honor. And for me, it's never been bowing to a statue or anything like that, but it's, again, to those innate qualities, our own Buddha nature. And reminding ourselves of that potential every day. And admiration for the teachings with the Dharma and again with the Sangha. So, hope to see you on the 18th. And again, there are some traditions who do a more formal initiation. Not ours. Unless you're going to take monastic vows. Comments, questions, ponderments, wonderments, made you think about. That was a great question. Thank you. Is there anyone who recites the refuges now that has their own special way of saying them that wants to share anything? Oh, Amy. Thank you.
I generally recite the refuges when I, each time I sit down on the cushion, and I might just do the sort of traditional short version. You know, I usually say it three times. So I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, and then I said for the second time, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge. Sangha. Then, for the third time, I take refuge in the Buddha. The third time, I take refuge in the Dhamma. The third time, I take refuge in the Sangha. So sometimes I say, so bear with me, it'll take a little bit. Sometimes I say a little longer version. I kind of heard, I think on a day-long retreat, I heard a teacher give her version, and then I couldn't remember what she, I kind of could remember what she said, but couldn't quite remember it. So then I kind of took some of hers and made some of mine as well. So I say something like, I take refuge in the Buddha, the one who became enlightened and spent the rest of his life teaching us what he discovered. I take refuge in the Dhamma, in the path to enlightenment taught to us by the Buddha. I take refuge in the Sangha, in those noble enlightened beings who learned from the Buddha and woke up. For the second time, I take refuge in the Buddha, in those already enlightened qualities in my own heart and mind. For the second time, I take refuge in the Dhamma, in the way things are. For the second time, I take refuge in the Sangha, in those beautiful qualities of human interaction, loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, equanimity. For the third time, I take refuge in the Buddha. Oh, I mixed up the order. Doesn't matter. In the possibility of the end of suffering. For the third time, I take refuge in the Dhamma, in this present moment right here and now. Because sometimes that's a translation of the Dhamma. Sometimes the Dhamma is a translation of what the Buddha taught, and sometimes the translation is the way things are. And then for the third time, I take refuge in Sangha. This can get long, just depending on what I want to say at the time. The monks and nuns throughout all the years since the Buddha who practiced and kept the practice alive. The translators, the authors, our teachers, our current teachers, those at IMS, our teacher here, Mark, the people at Common Ground, and I might think of people I know from Common Ground, bringing them one-to-one minds, bringing up my own Sangha, because sometimes Sangha is translated just to mean the Buddha's noble disciples who were at the time of the Buddha, who learned from him and became enlightened. And sometimes it's translated as like just all of us practicing. So sometimes it's translated as those who've been ordained also. Sometimes lay people are included. And all depends what translation. That's about it. But it could go on.
Now, I have to admit, I've heard Amy say this before and was so touched by it when she was such an intimacy when she talked about it once in a group that I didn't really plan to, but thank you, Amy, because it's so lovely. And I have to say that, that you know, creating your own extensions sometimes can be quite a beautiful experience and a helpful experience, I think, too, through the practice. So thank you. The other thing I wanted to say is that both the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh have been in writing, that they feel that it's very important that we as Westerners, if we had an initial religious training or experience in Christianity, Judaism, if we're trained as Muslims, whatever it is that our upbringing, that we bring some of that into our practice, that we don't abandon those roots. Both the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh have written about that to some degree. And so I'll just say to you that sometimes, not always, but sometimes when I am giving refuge to the Buddha, I will also evoke the other great spiritual masters. And I will, sometimes Christ will come in. It just depends. It's how in that moment what comes up for me. But that feels right. There's something about that legacy of my own tradition, my own upbringing, that fits. And it fits and it works for me. Other people would never do that. But for me, it provides an anchor, a reminder to my practice. So I'll mention that too, because I think that that can be important for many of us as we enter into deepening our practice. Other thoughts, questions, please.
Yeah, when you were at Palm Village, I was if you wanted those books one time, you mentioned something about putting Christian symbols on like an altar, like I don't know, crucifix or statuary. Did you see anything like that?
You know, I didn't. That doesn't mean that it wasn't there. I just didn't see it. Doesn't mean that it wasn't there. And yeah, that's right along with that train of thought that I was thinking of as well. There's a famous story that some of you may know about in this end about the Dalai Lama. He was at a conference, one of those Buddhist leader conferences, someplace on the East Coast, and it was held in a very large building, and he has lots of security with him when he was here. Some of you may have seen him and noticed that, and they kind of block off halls and whatever. And there was a, I believe it was a Catholic priest, was walking down one of the halls. I'm not sure if it's Catholic priest, but I think it was, walking down one of the halls, and somehow he got there with the security, and the Dalai Lama was walking by himself, you know, trying to get to the meeting room. And all of a sudden, he saw a statue of the Virgin Mary. And with no one else, he knew no one was looking, and all by himself, this priest saw him, turn, anjali, and bow in devotion and respect to the Virgin Mary. And this Catholic priest said that was one of the more moving things he's ever seen in one of these gatherings of the religious leaders from around the world. So I share that with you as well, as to say that creating space for sometimes is helpful. And taking refuge and thinking about that in your own practice. You, somebody here over here had a question too. Did they? No? Did you have a? Oh, I. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It might be nice for people who haven't heard it if those who know, we could do it in Pali.
Sure. Yeah. I think I did that quickly when I recited them, but we'll do it again. Just the phrases. Yeah. Okay. So those of you who are familiar with this, we'll just, do you want to start with Namo Tassa Bhagavato? Yeah, sure. So what we'll do is, traditionally, there you go to the Buddha three times and then we do these, so I'll say them. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sambha Sambuddha Sa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sambha Sambuddha Sa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sambha Sambuddha Sa. Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. That was my first chanting in public. It is quite lyrical, and when you hear a whole group of people doing it, it also can be so lovely, because you realize this has been repeated for 2,500 years, and somewhere in the world, you can bet, in another part of the globe, there's a group of people or an individual chanting this right now. And that makes it quite lovely, too. So I usually do like to chant it in Pali. There's just something lovely about that. So thanks for bearing with my chanting there.
Thank you for doing that. I spent a bit of time with some Theravada Buddhists there over in North Minneapolis. Yeah. And I went on a full-day retreat with them, and I've been in their center a couple times and whatnot. And they're from Sri Lanka. They have the saffron robes and the whole business. And they chanted that, and I had no idea what's going on. You know, I'm a guest, just appreciating it or whatever. So, but I recognized that, and they chanted it. Yeah.
And now you know what it is, and maybe a little bit more about the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
You can find it online, like YouTube, monks chanting and find the, you know, the Pali and
translation.
Sure.
It's easy to find it yourself. You got to admit, the internet, in particular YouTube, is pretty amazing. You know. So I hadn't thought about that, but I bet you could. Just Google Triple Gem or something like that, see what shows up.
I would like to say about some of the Catholic Christian comics, because I fall back on Christian beliefs, and yet I find myself also keep coming back to Buddhism, I just keep coming back to Buddhist literature, Jack Kornfield and Ram Dass. It's nice to see people's spiritual journeys evolve and change.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Marxists developed into a Buddhist practice and became from a Catholic household. So, it's just nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally really honor my Catholic heritage, too. So, it's an and. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of Catholics and Jewish people who practice Vipassana. I don't know why, but seem to do that.
For anybody who's interested, September 11th, all dinners of the original ways, over at St. Catherine, St. Kate's, and there's a beautiful book called The Dalai Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian.
Oh, beautiful.
You,
oh, thank you. That's great. Did everybody hear that? Wisdom Way at
Sisters of St. Joseph Brother at the St. Catherine's University. This is called Wisdom Way.
And what's the date of this? Where the
September 11th.
September 11th, there's going to be somebody speaking on Christianity and Buddhism.
His wife is practicing Buddhism.
Oh, great. Good. There's also a book that some of you who are interested in this, and there's actually a lovely, I didn't bring that book, but it's a lovely book by Thich Nhat Hanh. It's called Living Buddha, Living Christ. This may be a book for some of you. And in there, he has a wonderful, I don't know why I didn't read from that, but he has a wonderful discourse on the three gems and equates it to Christianity as well. So for some of you, that may be something that you would like to read. I'm pretty sure that book is down in the library because I think I donated an extra copy I had, so you could probably find it down there too. Other questions? Oh, good. The Living Buddha, Living Christ. Thich Nhat Hanh's book. Okay. Please.
I was able to see the Dalai Lama when he was here, and maybe some of you also did, but I'm struck to say, he talked about non-attachment to practices. He talked about his own non-attachment to Buddhism. He honors Buddhism, but it's not attached to Buddhism, and that we need to honor other traditions, including non-religious traditions, and maybe what we would call non-believers, that all people are to be honored.
It's really nice. Thank you. Thank you for that. Other thoughts, questions, comments? Well, maybe we should just wrap this up then, because I think it's about 8:30, so... We just take a moment of silence here to wrap it up, and allowing the thoughts and the conversation to just fall to the side and letting ease come to the mind and the body. Finding the breath again in the body. And bringing to mind the sharing in this room this evening, and the diligence of our practice, the gathering of this Sangha tonight in this room, Sanghas all over the world. And with gratitude, bringing to mind our teachers and families and all those who support us on our path. Sharing the merit of our time together here tonight with all of them. May all beings everywhere be happy. May all beings everywhere know freedom.